My name is Alan Smith, and I was born in Allendale, 1911. Now that was long before there was any such thing as electricity or gas in Allendale. That's going back when there was old post tubes and mangles. My mother used to have a post tube and a mangle to wash her clothes on a washing day, and there was no such thing as electric of any kind. Everything had to be done by hand. Now, when I grew up, I used to go quite a lot of shooting and that sort of thing, fishing in the river up and down the River Allen, and I used to poach Lord Allendale's pheasants because Lord Allendale had all the ground up there, and I used to know exactly where his keepers were on certain days. And I used to go up and shoot these pheasants when he was out on the fell shooting the grouse. And I also played in the local football team. And I was in the band, the Allendale Blazer Ball and Silver Prize Band.
What did you play?
I played a baritone and I played an A-flat bass. And we went on 1928, we went down to London, and we played at the Crystal Palace in London, and the following year we went to Bellevue, Manchester, and played there. Now when we were at London, we left Allendale in an old shalabang, if you know what a shalabang is, and it had solid tyres, and it brought us down. Harry Lancaster was the driver. He brought us down to Hexham railway station, and we got the train down to Newcastle, and then down to London. We stayed all night in the Northumberland Hotel just near the Crystal Palace, and we played there, and out of 15 bands we came fifth, and we came up on the following day back to Allendale, and Harry Lancaster met us with his old shalabang in solid tyres at Texan railway station. We went up Allendale, we got there about 7 o'clock in the morning, and we all got out at the bottom of Allendale at the hall, and we played a march, the Death of Glory, they called the march, right up through Allendale, and all the windows was open, people were still in bed on the Sunday morning, all the windows were open, everybody was looking out to see what was going on, and it was a great reception we had when we got back. Now,
When did you start playing in the band?
When I went into the RAF, all the lads had to go that were in the band, you see. We all went joined up. I joined the RAF, I volunteered for the RAF, and I did my training at Blackpool in Albert Road, and went to a school in Blackpool. And I did 3.5 months at Blackpool, and then went to Lossiemouth up in the north of Scotland, and we were up there about nearly 12 months, I would say, and then I was posted back on a hydraulic course back to Oldham at Odium near Blackpool again, and then from then on, well, I was posted different places, and then we went over.
What year was this?
1939, 1943,
so you
years,
went right
the
at the
war
beginning.
Years, the war years, aye, through the war years. And then, of course, we went over on just before the war finished, about a year before the war finished, the Canadians took at Weevilgham, a place called Weevilgham. And we went over there, and we were maintained the planes, kites we called them, Wellingtons and Halifaxes.
That would be in Belgium.
Belgium, aye.
So your job was maintenance of the aircraft.
That's right. And when we'd done a job on the plane, the pilot, he'd come along and say, who's done this job, you see? And they say, me, sir. He says, hop in. And he used to take us up for a flight, 10 minutes, quarter of an hour, just a test. So therefore I did quite a lot of flying, like, you know.
Yeah.
And and we had a great time over there, really. You know, they had your ups and you had your downs, and really it was quite all right.
Yeah.
Aye. So, what else? Do you want to tell more about the...
Well, why don't we ask Lawrence now to introduce yourself, Lawrence.
Yes, well, do you want me to do similar to what I
always
do?
Yes, that's fine, yes.
Well, I was born in Allendale in 1920, and I went to Allendale School. After school, I went to work at the lead mines at Sipton, and in the office there, but also used to go down the mine with the manager surveying. We went down a shaft at Sipton, which was 55 fathom, which is 110 yards, and used to survey down there and travel underground for quite a distance. There was once, I remember, we had to come out a drift, and to get to this drift, we had to climb ladders and with a gas lamp. So halfway up the ladders, the miners below us fired off the dynamite, the shots, to bring out the lead. And I was halfway up when the blast from them blew up my light. So I was left in the dark and had to finish the climb in the dark, which I managed. I was quite a bit younger in those days.
So what was your job at the lead mine?
I was actually in the office, but I had other jobs to do. One particular morning, which one of my jobs was to get the dynamite from the magazine. The magazine was up a field in by itself, which is obvious. I didn't want to be, and I had to go up and get the dynamite for the miners. One morning, very, very cold, frosty morning, I went up and opened the two big doors with the big keys. I got 50 pounds of polar almond gelignite onto my shoulder with 200 detonators, 100 detonators in each pocket. So I set off back down, and when I got into the yard near the office, it was very, very slippy, and I felt my feet just going. Luckily, I managed to regain my balance. If I'd gone down then and the detonators had exploded, the mine would have gone off and the office would have been, I would have been completely obliterated, plus the office. Never mind, it didn't happen.
How were you 14 when you started in the office?
No, I would be a bit more, maybe 16.
Right. Mm. And how did you get the job?
It was through a weird lead company. I just probably applied for it and there'd be a job coming up.
What did your father do?
My father did various things, actually. What a little bit grand, you see. And he sometimes worked on the roads, and he finished up working in the Blackett level. Mm-hmm. That's the level that goes up to Allen Heads, maintaining that. Mm-hmm. And after that, on May the 16th, 1940, I went down to Bulford, into the army. I got a terrible shock, going from home life to army life. Anyway, we did intensive training at Bulford Camp, and after a while we were posted to South Wales. We were put into tents. The weather turned very, very bad, and the water was running one side of the tent and out the other, so we had to come out of there, and we went into civvy billets. My friend and I went into a pub, which anyway, we got awful colds. We were pretty poorly, but the landlady of the pub gave us, you know, hot drinks at nights to make us feel better. And I spent quite a bit of time there near Bedford. From then, I was sent on embarkation leave. We weren't sure where we were going at all, but anyway, I got home, and after I went back, we got on the train and went up to Scotland, King George V docks at Glasgow, and got on the Cape Town Castle. And we were bound for North Africa. We set off on January the 12th, 1941. The ship was frozen, all the gangways had changed, everything was hard frozen. It was a terrible winter. And we started, sailed across the top of Ireland and started to head south. And when we were getting near Gibraltar, they were started to put the sun blinds up and the weather was fine. We pulled in at Gibraltar, two of the fastest ships, to pick some RAF that had been shelled on Christmas Day of 1940. And we picked them at Gibraltar, and at Gibraltar, the Ark Royal, the original Ark Royal, was berthed next to us. And remember a band coming out on the Sunday morning and playing. Now, very shortly after that, the Ark Royal was sunk in the Mediterranean. It was torpedoed. After that, there was another Ark Royal built, of course. We sailed from there to Freetown, pulled in at Freetown, had to use mosquito nets because of the mosquitoes. Then I sailed down to Cape Town, and we had 4 days in Cape Town. Beautiful. The weather was absolutely gorgeous. No sign of war, no blackout, no nothing. Anyway, we had the 4 days there, sailed up past Madagascar and pulled into Port Tewfik on the 21st of March, on the 2nd of March, it was my birthday, I was 21, sailing up the Red Sea, and we pulled into Port Tewfik, and from then on we went into a place called Nephilia, and from then on I spent about four and a half years in the Middle East, and up and down the desert, and finished up. We got up as far as Sfax in Tunisia. And I've been in all the places that are mentioned in the news at the moment, Tobruk, Benghazi, Tripoli, I've been through all them. And came back, and when we sailed up, back up the cliff, we came back through the Mediterranean because we couldn't go through the Mediterranean because of these submarines. But when later on we managed to get back through the Mediterranean, back past Gibraltar, and sailed up the Clyde on one beautiful June day, and I've never seen the grass as green in my life. As I mean, coming from the desert to that. And then after that I was, went back home on leave. I was stationed at Hexham for a while here, just to get home every night. And after that I was sent to Belsen Camp, and I finished my army career in Germany. Debarbed in 1945, I think. And after that, I worked for the post office for 37 years.
Well, we'll come back to that in a minute. But, Alan, could you tell me a little bit about your family life? How many brothers and sisters? I know you've got one brother.
That's all.
That's all.
Just the two of you?
Just the two of us.
Uh-huh. Right. And your father was working at these different jobs and...
Well, yes, he did work in the Stublik pit, which is just about 2 miles out of Houndale, down in the mine. And they was working in 18-inch seams. It was coal there. Mm-hmm. And they used to work in 18-inch seams. And that to hew with picks the coal and push it back, and then... It was taken up, you know, and brought to Langley Station to be on the train. And otherwise, he had a small farm, which all the people up there did. They all had a small farm, and we had about half a dozen cows, a couple of heifers and that. And we used to send eggs and milk down to the cooperative store. They used to buy them
in Allendale.
In Allendale, and
so what was your family home just outside Allendale?
No, well, just a very short distance.
About a quarter of a mile.
quarter of a mile high. And it's right on the very top, and we had a lovely view looking right over the village and right to onto the Cheviots, actually. We could see miles. And really, that was the life, really, then.
And
there was no...
And what can you remember about the school that you went to?
Well, now then, when I started school, I was about five, and there was no electric in the school, and we had slates and slate pencils. And when in standard one, infants in standard one, if you got anything wrong, you used to spit on your sleeve and rub the off the slate, you see. And then we had an old stove in the middle of the room. There was no electric, just an old cold stove with the chimney out through the roof. And when the wind got into the wrong art, it used to blow all the smoke back down, and you couldn't see who was sitting next to you in the room.
Was it just one schoolroom?
No, there was two schoolrooms. And one had a fireplace, you know, the other just a big round stove.
There'd be a partition between them. A glass partition,
which used to pull along. Mm. And I left school at 13.
And what did you go and do then?
Well, there was a builder in Allendale, and I started for him, Nicol Glendennin. And of course, he used to give me all the jobs of breaking cement floors up if we were going to lay a floor or something like that in them days. And being just young and lad, and he used to give me any job like that. And then I got on, I could cement it, and I could do a bit of mason work as well. And then there was a joiner up there, and I went to him, and I had seven shilling a week with Nicol Glendennin. And there was a joiner up there, and he said to me one day, he says, "How much does Nicol pay you, lad?" I says, "7 shilling." He said, "I'll give you 8, start for me on Monday." And I did. And as I say, I left school at 13.
That's nice about a job,
because you could then, if your birthday was coming up near to the summer holidays, right. See. And of course, I went from there onto, the electricity started to come to Allendale. Uh-huh. So I got a job there with electric.
What date would that be, do you think?
Oh, 19 and when the electric come to Allendale, Malcolm?
Around about 38, I think.
38, was it? Mm-hmm. 1938. And I got a job on digging holes for the putting poles in, you know. Mm-hmm. And when that job was finished, the firm I was working, Overhead Limited, they had a lot of work in Ireland, and they wanted me to go over there with them, but I wouldn't. And I got a job on the electricity board in Hexham here, and I came on here, and I worked on here for practically all my life, for the rest of my life. And that's where I finished. And I knew all the farmers and everything, from here to the Carter Bar, from here to Kielder, from here to Alston. I used to even know whether they used to say, "Now, if we're not in when it comes around, Alan, the keys to both the roan cow and the byre, just go and put the kettle on," you know. And I knew all them places. I finished up till I was 65, and I finished then. Mm-hmm. And since then I retired, and I've been on two or three, where I'm on four committees, three committees now, really. And the accordion club, and the beating club, and one thing or another. And that's practically my life story, except in the 5 years I was in the RAF. Aye, so.
And you were telling me earlier about your father's family coming from Scotland.
They did.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what date they came down from Scotland?
Well, the mill, they had a Hollis mill, and it was near Annan. We've been to it, and it was burnt down, evidently. And them days, there was no insurance. and they had to leave Hollis Mill, and I don't know exactly how they got to Allendale, but they did, and that's where we were born, you see, in Allendale. And I don't know just what really, how they got there. Never sort of inquired how they got from Hollis Mill.
I never knew.
Huh?
I never knew.
No, I didn't know how they got to Allendale.
No.
But they did. Mm-hmm. And that's how it all happened.
And what about your mother's family?
Well, the Charltons.
They were farming, weren't they?
They were farmers. And they lived up at Cinderhope. That's about 3 miles out of Allendale. They lived at Cinderhope and they were farmers. And they were farming family-like. But I don't know.
They farmed for the rest of their lives, practically, I mean.
Aye.
That was, that's when times were very hard.
Aye.
And so, Lawrence, you were talking before about coming back and being demobbed and going into the post office.
Yes.
So you'd be in your mid-20s, something like that?
Yes.
And what job did you start doing?
Well, I started, when I first started the post office, I was on walking duties. And I used to walk 17 miles every day delivering mail. And after a while, I got a push bike, and then I came onto the post office vans, and I was on vans till I finished.
So what was your patch when you were doing the 17 miles a day?
Called a dry burn, and that was from Allendale. I used to start up at Allendale, go down to Herne Hounds Pub, down to all the bridge end, what they call the bridge end, then to Thornley Gate, and did all Thornley Gate, up past the Juniper Farm, along to Hawk Steel, and then over from Hawk Steel, over the top, down into...
Dryside?
Where Summers has lived, Miles Scott. And go down, well, we used to finish at a place called Pasture Head, which was the... if you went any further than that, you dropped off the end of the world, you know. And then from Pasture Head back across the fell and walked back to Allendale. It was 17 miles a day until I got onto the vans. And then from the vans, we used to do four different places. We did what they call the steel, which was all the woolly side of Allendale. We did all round Nine Banks and Allen Heads, Car Shield. We did all that. And I used to have to did sometimes a split shift, which I did a morning delivery, and then they had to start on collections in the afternoon in those days. Start at 2 o'clock, collect up Cinderhope, Sparty Lee, Allen Heads, over to Carshiel, Nine Banks, Whitfield, back to Allendale, and then we used to get into Hexham at about 5, 6 o'clock at night, and then go back home. In the winter it was driving in the snow and the ice and the...
Did you start from Hexham then in the morning? Do you have to come and collect?
No, Allendale. It was the... Nowadays, they do come to Hexham to start. No, the vans were all stationed at Allendale.
Mm-hmm.
The vans were all kept in a garage at Allendale.
So where was the sorting done?
The sorting was done at Allendale. The mail was brought up from Hexham to Allendale, and we sorted all the local stuff. Now, I mean, if you post a letter in Allendale for next door, it goes to Newcastle and then back. But we sorted all the local stuff and into different deliveries and set off and delivered.
Tell me a bit more about what your job entailed, Alan, in the electricity board.
Yes. Well, it entailed going out to faults, any fault, overhead fault, whether it be on the pylons or whether it be on the poles in villages.
That from was here, all weathers, wasn't it?
All weathers. And
mm-hmm.
Right out, our area was right out from Hexham to the Carter Bar and Kildare, and over to as far as Alston, and Blanchland. That was our area. It was a very big area.
We sometimes in the middle of the night as well.
Yeah. We used to many a time just get into bed the other night and the phone went and there was a fault at Keeldin. It was, you looked out the door and it was snowing and you had still had to go. And in them days we only really had vans in the beginning. We didn't have Land Rovers. Many a time we got stuck in the snow and had to dig ourselves out, you know. And I knew everybody, all the farmers and everybody around about. And all the work was done on overhead lines. And we used to work a lot of weekends because they used to send us down to Prudder and these places to work when they had the electric off on the big pylons. We used to go down there checking insulators and this sort of thing, renewing insulators. Mm-hmm. And twice a year we used to go down to Dunstan and the big towers which cross over the Tyne. We used to have to go up there and paint them, and battleship grey paint. And it always took a weekend down there, and believe me, there was more paint on us. And you used to have to climb about 130 feet and then sort of swing out and inspect the insulators and then swing back again and get and start painting and coming right down painting. Did that about twice a year.
So what kind of training did you have for this job?
Well, nothing really, because I started with the contractors, you see, when they were putting the poles in Downdale. And I just worked my way up. I started just digging holes.
Yeah.
And eventually I just started getting onto the line.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I did it.
So you would learn by experience, of course.
That's all, just experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on there for the last 65. And I don't think I was ever off work very much at all.
So no. Still doing the outdoor work then?
Hey?
And you were still doing the outdoor work when you were 65?
Oh, yes, I worked right up to 65. Oh, yeah, I was quite fit then. Great, eh? Yes, I worked right up to 65, and I used to be on the pylons, snowy nights, winter, and way out Otterburn, these places, you know. It was a good life. It was kind of a hard life, but I didn't take any harm. Not a bit of it. No.
I've been used to fresh air all my life, outdoors. Never indoors, really. I mean, you know, working outdoors all the time.
Yes, aye.
We were talking before a bit about the tar barrels.
Uh-huh.
Can you tell me anything about that?
Well, both of us can. Yes, I remember when... goes back when they were tarring the roads, where you saw the tar boiler and the steam. There was a man in the gang then, he used to work on the roads, and he used to tell us when there was some empty barrels, tar barrels, and the barrels used to come from Concert with an old wagon, and he used to load throw the full barrels off onto the roadside. Maybe a dozen would bring or so, and put them at the roadside, you see. And then when they got them emptied, Jack Stevenson, he worked in the gang of the work, and he used to say to me, he used to say, there's half a dozen barrels lying in the back of the wall up there. They're coming for them tomorrow morning, take them back, empty ones to Concert. Of course, we straight away got them. We used to take them away and hide them somewhere. There was one year we hid them under a some hay in the hay loft, and so they couldn't be found. We hid them all over in the old flues. There's two flues goes from the smelt mills at Allendale under the chimneys at the top, about 3-4 miles, all underground nearly. Take there because they used to bring the lead from Allen Heads down to Allendale, and it was smelted, smelt mills,
mm-hmm.
And the fumes they put. Tunnels right there onto the fell, high up onto the fell.
There's two chimneys up there.
Two chimneys, and the smoke used to go up there. And to this day, I don't think the heather's grown around about where the lead fell, you know, was in there. And then every now and again he used to close one of the tunnels down, and he used to send men in to take the old lead, work inside the tunnel.
For paint, wasn't it?
For paint.
Mm.
Aye.
When they have lead in the paint.
Get the lead out, you see. And they reckon that Youngdale lead mines were very nearly taxed for silver mines.
That's exactly right.
There was a lot of silver in the lead at Youngdale.
Mm.
Aye. And then there was a lot of years after, wait, how long is it since, they started at Swinup up there, and they drove right into the hill under Killip Law, and they were driving right in. And the old miners used to say, you'll never find any lead the way you're going. And but they went in to work for 3 or 4 years doing that, and they got right under Killip. Now, everybody used to say they weren't looking for lead. It was for storing nuclear energy,
nuclear waste.
Mm-hmm. Waste.
Mm-hmm.
And they never
did it, though, did they?
They never did it.
No. Never used them.
But they'll still be there.
Mm-hmm.
The tunnel will still be there. They worked for about 3 or 4 years doing that, making a big tunnel where they could get a truck in. And it's still there. It'll be still there. We walled up like it, at the front. Mm. Aye.
I think they mentioned about so many ounces to the being of lead, and if it said there was more silver than there was, more silver there, it could have been classed as a silver mine. And if it had been, there would have been more revenue to pay to the Lord Allendale or
Lord Allendale.
Mm-hmm. So it was just classed as a lead mine, but not as a silver mine.
But you mentioned Lord Allendale before.
Uh-huh.
Did you meet him? Was he a figure who was often seen around?
Saw him around odd times, but
never
knew anything about him.
No.
No.
They reckon the people of Hexham wanted him to be Lord Hexham, but he chose to be Allendale. He thought it was a better name, I think. And
that's,
of course,
that's where all his revenue, that's where all his wealth came from.
That's
wasn't
right.
It?
And then, of course, he's got all the shooting up there, you know.
Mm.
And the Arabs and these people come over today to shoot the grouse. He has a big shoot up there, Lord Allendale. Of course, all the Arabs have come over now. And I don't know what they pay to shoot. It'll be a big thing, I'll bet.
Actually, at the moment, there's somebody that's taken over part of the Allen Heads estate for grouse shooting. And they arrive up to Spiencorp, Alan, at the top
Spiencorp,
of with a helicopter. So he's quite rich. I don't know who he was. He's quite rich, but he's taken over part of the Allendale just for shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Grouse shooting.
Spiencorp?
Spiencorp, I think it
was
is.
Was that named after,
it would be after
the battle?
South Africa.
In the Boer War?
Yes.
Yes.
I think it's Spiencorp.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be Afrikaners, I should think.
So, thinking about your very early life, Alan, what are your first memories? Can you remember anything about the First World War, for example?
Well, yes, I can. You mentioned it, yes. I would be about, 5 or 6 in 1918. I was born 1911, so I'll be 5 or 6. And I well remember... The New Year's Eve, the first New Year's Eve, you see, while the war was on, when the lads come back, the Kaiser was the man instead of Hitler. It was the Kaiser in the First World War. Now, they strung a line, a clothesline from the Golden Lion across the post office, and they hung the Kaiser above the fire. An image, you know, the fire. And I remember going there with my mother, and that being 18, 19, and they burnt the Kaiser. I can remember that. And that was about 1918, 19, and I was about 4 or 5 year old. And ever since then, I mean, I've continued to be as much involved as I possibly can with New Year's Eve. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever carry a...
I've carried 71 barrels. Yeah, tar barrels. Carried 71.
Now, How about you, Lawrence?
I must have carried about 60. I carry a torch now.
Carries
a torch now because the barrels are pretty heavy.
It's getting a bit heavy now.
But
I carried my first barrel at 15.
The war years were away at the war years, but it was it never died out, because am I right, Alan, to say that
Lancy Bell,
yes,
Joyner.
There was a man called Lancy Bell Joyner, and they used to light a barrel underneath tin sheets because of the blackout, to say that it never.
Well, what Lancy did, he actually carried a barrel around unlit, around the, where the procession goes. And then brought it back and put some tins over the top and lit it at 12 o'clock. So really, it never went down from whenever it started New Year's Eve. We don't know. It goes back. Some people reckon it went back to the days when they used to have to guise up people on New Year, and they used to go into people's houses guised up and to chase the evil spirits out for the new spirits to come in at the New Year. But that's, I don't know whether that was true, but that's what they did.
It does go an awful long way back.
Because really there's
no
church doings in it. Just simply...
And the oldest men you talked to when we were young didn't know when it started.
No.
Their fathers, forefathers... Didn't know when it started.
They all carried... You've got to be born bred in Aldale to carry a barrel.
Yeah.
A stranger couldn't. Mm-hmm. No. And you had to be born, and still you've got to be born.
Did you say there was about 15 barrels on when you first started?
Yes, aye.
And now it'll be about 45.
45, aye. Mm-hmm. You see, because we had to steal our own barrels and go around anybody that had a postube. You steal them at night, or people that had troughs in the field feeding sheep and putting cake in for the sheep, we used to go and steal them. The postman, he used to come and say, "No, look, it's High Studden, Robson Road at High Studden's, just getting about half a dozen troughs in the field, which just make good tar barrels, and he's feeding his sheep in." Well, we used to go up night and pinch them and make them into tar barrels.
We hope the health and safety don't come in. I mean, they are... the makers put barriers around now and have marshals and loudhailers and all the rest of it, which we never used to have before. It just happened and that was it. But
did you know of any accidents that happened?
Nothing major.
Lucky.
One
very,
man had
very lucky.
Burnt his fingers a little bit, but he wasn't wearing gloves. But that was. But no, there's never been a major accident at all.
Yeah, people come from miles away now, don't they, to see it.
From abroad, you talk to them from abroad, all different places in England. It's unique, really. There are Ottery St Mary down in Cornwall. One man carries a blazing barrel on his back, and the boys do it, youngest boys, through the streets there. They've got away with it, but I believe the insurance that they've got to pay down there is colossal. And it's not New Year's Eve anyway. And then there's the up Halia at...
There's one up in Scotland.
Where they burn the Viking boat.
Mm-hmm. Aye.
In Scotland. But that isn't New Year's Eve, it's somewhere in...
January or February. Aye.
But as... I think it's unique. New Year's Eve.
Allendale's the only place on New Year's Eve, I think.
And on the... Which year was it? They had a firework display in Allendale, a big firework display, and the Millennium?
Millennium?
After the fire.
Aye.
That went off very well.
Aye.
The weather's sometimes very, very bad, and sometimes...
Depends on the night. Sometimes it can be snow on, you know, and people kind of get it.
One time there's nobody got any further than Catton to Allendale.
But a lot of people say it's far better then because they get all locals, no strangers.
A lot of houses used to be open, not so many open now because you get people from Newcastle.
First footing, you know.
Yeah.
First footing.
Oh, yes, we used to first foot. We used to, after the fire, We used to go off till many a time. I've gone off after the 12 o'clock, first went around, way around, and till the next morning. There was one place we used to go to, Little's at Broadwood Hall. We used to get there about 8 o'clock in the morning, and Dick and Reg, the two sons, were lying in bed. And Eva, she used to say, "Come on, give us a hand to milk." And we used to milk. That was still guised up. Oh yeah, still with the guising on.
So what would people give you when you went round first footing?
Well, ooh, just a drink and a bit of cake.
I'm surprised you were still standing.
Sandwich or you get a sandwich or whatever. I mean, we don't drink very much at all.
No,
in fact,
no.
I'm driving around usually now. I go around the car because I can't walk at all now. And I don't take any alcohol or drink. I don't take any normally anyway.
No, I don't either.
So we don't drink at all now. But on New Year's Eve, I strictly keep off it.
Aye.
It's not worth it.
But I've seen me go all day, guys up different, going into houses. And then the next night, there was always a fancy dress dance at Allendale. And I used to go to that. Never been in bed. There used to be a fancy dress ball in New Year's Day at night.
I remember going to one of these fancy dress balls when I was dressed up at night.
Aye.
And I never thought I would get anything. I got second prize.
Aye.
I forgot what I was dressed in then.
Aye. Huh? Oh, aye.
So when you say guys do it, describe the costumes that you wore.
Have you any photographs? We've
got all the photos there.
Well, we can have a look. Maybe they're in here. Are they in here?
There'll be some in there.
Alan, what about that one of us? Oh, there's you were there. What about the one of us to taken by the fire?
Yes, I'll get that.
Because that's one of the good ones.
This one.
I tell you what, I've got the Weedle Gazette in the car.
Oh, this is your nephew, isn't it?
That's me.
Is it?
Me, yeah.
Gosh, you look just like him.
I was dressed as the...
you look like a pearly king.
That's what I was.
Oh, really?
Yes, really. Well, that's me.
That's excellent. It's a good picture, that.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it? I can't imagine course this, actually.
And this...